guest today is longtime friend Larry Lindsey, one of the greatest economic minds in our country. He served as senior economic roles under President Reagan and Bush. He also served on the board of governors for the Federal Reserve. Larry, we're going to have an interesting discussion here. I'm going to learn a lot.
Well, Boone, you're very gracious to have me.
Let's talk economy first.
Oh my gosh, you know, it's the dismal science.
Are we going to have a recession?
At some point. I'm not sure it's going to be tomorrow or next week, but you know, we're now in seventh year of what's been a pretty slow expansion, but it's still 7 years. And one way to think about it is it's like, you know, dog years and stuff like that. Basically, 1 month of expansion is like 1 year of life. So we've got an expansion now that's in its 80s. Go 90s, it can even go to 100. But, you know, once you get to 110, 120, it's pretty tough. And so
you're saying it's coming.
It's coming. And I would say
it's going to be severe.
Well, you know, that depends on what we do. Right now, we've got a policy that's artificially keeping things going.
Well, you're talking about printing money.
Printing money. We're doing plenty of it. We still have near zero interest rates.
I can't believe that.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. Everybody loves the party, and we all had a great time in the party. And then people don't like the hangover afterwards. So they gave them a little hair of the dog for the party. In fact, they gave them $4 trillion worth of hair of the dog. That's how big the Federal Reserve's balance sheet is right now. Plus that, plus zero interest rates. The idea was, you know, let's postpone the hangover as long as we can. Well, you can only do it so long, and that's what our problem is.
So hangovers, you're going to pay.
You're going to pay. Look, we had a huge, huge money-funded expansion. Here in Washington, you probably noticed, we never like to blame ourselves for anything. But in fact, Washington caused a good portion of the last few crises. We're now in our third bubble, printed money for the dot-com bubble in the 90s. We printed money to fund the housing bubble, and now we're printing money to fund a credit bubble. And at some point, you can't print money and make it happen over and over again.
Could the trigger be for the recession? Could it be recovery of oil prices?
Well, it could be. The bigger threat here was that oil prices maybe never recover.
Now, wait a minute. You make that statement. How could that be?
A lot of investments were funded with all this cheap money, including a lot of investments in the energy industry. It's non-conventional for a reason, meaning under conventional finances, it just didn't make sense to take a lot of money out of the ground. But if money is free, you can do a lot of things you wouldn't ordinarily do. And so a lot of investment was put in on the assumption you have $70, $80 oil. Well, if you didn't have $70 or $80 oil, and we didn't because people did all this investment, guess what happens? An investment that made sense at zero interest rates at $80 doesn't make any sense at all.
Okay, but when you say that oil prices never increase, did I hear you say that?
No, we would get into trouble if they never increased, because then you'd have this huge washout.
You agree that prices have to increase.
Prices are going to have to increase. We are well below the marginal cost of production. We're down 20,000 barrels a day in production last week. It's been pretty consistent, down 20,000 barrels a day. All right, well, there's a limit to how long that can go on and keep prices where they are. And so you've been in this industry forever, right? And you know what is going to happen. And
yeah, and I keep getting rich and then going broke. I probably need a consultant like you the next time I get rich, so you're too old to go broke.
All right. Well, I'm here to help any way I can.
Okay. But I see the market is oversupplied by maybe 1.5 million barrels a day. That's all. And when you quit drilling, and that's happened all over the world, not just the United States.
Right.
But today, you've gone from 1,609 rigs in November of 14 down to today 350 rigs.
You know something, Boone? I'm going to quote you. Back in, I think it was late 14 or early 15, you told me that we got 1,400 rigs running today, and I'll bet you in a couple years we'll be down to 200 or 300. And you were absolutely right.
Yep. But as the price fell, the rigs were stacked.
Right.
It makes sense. The Saudis wanted to offload swing producers to us. Easy to do. I mean, it isn't a government decision to cut production. It's economics require you quit drilling
right.
when you're losing money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so today, and the decline curve will be steep. And what happened is it held up pretty good because there were 4,000 wells drilled and not completed. They cemented casing, didn't perforate, didn't fracture the wells, and stepped back away from them and said, wait for a better price. Well, now that's sunk cost. Now, figure on getting some money out of those wells. And so a lot of those wells have been completed, and it held production up. Now that's over with. Now decline sets in that 20,000 barrels a day is going to soon be 50,000 barrels a day.
Right, and that's dropping about every week, right?
That's right.
And that's globally, and if you're only a million barrels in excess supply, just the 20 for a year is going to wipe out that. Plus, you're going to have demand growth. Plus, you're going to have supply cuts everywhere else.
That's right. And it's going to go back up.
It is going to go back
up. The one thing that stays down is natural gas. Because, I mean, the United States has more natural gas than any place in the world. And it's abundant. It's very easy to get to. And too much of it was drilled. And a lot of it has to be worked off before. But decline has started on natural gas, too. So we're going to have energy increases. But could that kick off the recession?
No, I don't think by itself it would. You know, usually the mistake is not in the marketplace. The mistake is a policy mistake here in Washington. And it could be a decision by the Federal Reserve. It could be a mistake by the administration, a regulatory mistake by the administration. It could be an international situation where some other country decides to do something foolish. That's usually the cause of a recession, and we got a lot of foolish decision makers around.
Oh, we do.
Tip us there.
So much of that is in areas that are very productive of oil.
Yes.
Yeah, where a bad decision affects
everybody.
Oil. That's right. Take me to politics.
Oh my gosh! You go from depressing to even more depressing.
I'm old, so I've seen a lot of. I was asking Des Moines, Iowa. A year ago, said, who was the first Republican? I said, I'd never voted for a Democrat for president, always Republican. He said, who was the first Republican you voted for? And I gave a question, you know, I said, well, it'd have to be Abe Lincoln. And the crowd didn't laugh. They didn't laugh. It took them 15 seconds before they started to laugh. Said, no, he wasn't there with Abe Lincoln. But you could see they almost thought I was. But the first person I voted for was Tom Dewey. 48,
okay.
Yeah.
In Texas, that was a pretty rare thing to do, too.
It was. Because, well, of course, it's Harry Truman is who it was against. But Texas was, it was Democrat.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I was born in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And when I was born, the state of Oklahoma was 100% Democrat, 77 counties. Last presidential election, 77 counties went Republican.
Wow.
In Oklahoma.
Wow.
So,
you were the trendsetter.
Well, my aunt was my school teacher, and she said, I'm the only Republican, registered Republican, in Hughes County, Oklahoma. And she said, not because Republicans are good, they're just not as bad as Democrats.
I gotcha. All right.
It kind of turned out that way, you know. They're neither one good.
Well, you know, and I think the public has picked up on that. We're seeing a lot of anger at the way the country's been run. I think that it's justified. We're going to talk about my book, Conspiracies of the Ruling Class. And I looked into why people are angry, and I think they have a right to be angry. So on the Democrat side, you see people angry by going with Bernie Sanders. On the Republican side, it's been Trump and Cruz who have been attacking the ruling class.
Can you believe?
I've never seen a year like this in my life, and no. And I've been following politics a long time. But, you know, Republican voters in particular are very angry at the way things have been going, and they pick the two most outside candidates as the two they went with. And, you know, when you get a whooping, you get a whooping, and the Republican establishment really got one this year.
Well, you know, you look at Donald Trump, I mean, it really is unbelievable.
It is, and, you know, he's a terrific salesman. He identified a product that was needed, the public wanted. They wanted someone who would express their anger, and he provided that. You know, I think Donald's weakness, if I can be frank, is that he's just a salesman. And when the car breaks or the dishwasher breaks, the salesman isn't the guy who comes and fixes it. And I think what he's found in the last few weeks maybe is, you know, people want someone who's going to fix it too. And we'll see how it actually works out. But what he's done as a salesman has been absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, but he's been a successful businessman.
Yes.
So he must have, and he's had four bankruptcies.
So he knows up and down.
Yeah. Atlantic City, he said, we'll bury Las Vegas. You remember that?
I do.
And Atlantic City was a disaster. But the guy has made a lot of money. He loses and he wins. And so he must have fixed something to be able to, on those winning junkets that he's been on.
So if he's been bankrupt four times and recovered four times, I would say he's batting 500. Maybe I've been in Washington too long. In fact, I know I've been in Washington too long. There's a lot of similarities between what's needed in government and business, but there's a lot of dissimilarities. And, you know, we'll see. I'm willing to be surprised, but maybe it's because I have at least one foot in the establishment that I'll call me a skeptic.
Well, you look at the other candidate, and he has two senators
supporting him. Well, Ted's a tough, prickly personality.
That, I think that's perfect, and I haven't heard it. Prickly personality. Yeah,
he is. And, you know, I'll be honest. I've known him a long time. I've known his wife a long time. I mean this not as an excuse, but as an explanation. Ted's had a tough life, and I think that explains his personality. You know, mom and dad were petroleum engineers, and that's why he was born in Calgary. It's the downturn of the 80s. He was a young kid then. Both mom and dad lost their jobs. Dad became an alcoholic, little bit abusive. Mom became an alcoholic. Dad left the house. Mom and Ted moved to Texas. An evangelical church takes them in, provides them spiritual support and financial support, which that's why he has his evangelical faith. He goes to the local school, local evangelical school. Smart guy. He ends up at Princeton from there. Okay, now I've went to the Ivy League. I'll admit it, but Princeton is about the most snobbish Ivy League school there is, and they look down at Ted. And so here you have this really smart guy with a tough upbringing.
Yeah, they said he was the smartest kid there in the class and didn't have one friend.
He wasn't one of them, and you know I think you look at Ted, and the same thing happened at Harvard Law, where he was considered one of the brightest people ever go to Harvard Law. He, by the way, was national debate champion, things like that. You know, I think that kind of explains it. If you're that bright and yet people look down on you, you're going to develop a pretty tough skin. I think of him as a little bit like a lobster. He's got a really tough exterior, and I understand why he's got that tough exterior.
I see him as extremely narrow and not have much flexibility in dealing with people. Is that fixable?
I think it's modifiable. You know, as somebody who thinks Washington needs a lesson, you get a really smart guy in there who really doesn't like the establishment, he's going to change things. And so I guess, you know, that's my view.
That's what you want. I mean,
that's where I am.
The other day, I'm talking to Carl Icahn, and Carl and I are old friends, and he said, look, Boone, you want change. I want change. And he said, Trump can give us change. Said, I can tell you he can give you change. And I said, what about Cruz? And he said, well, he may be able to too. But he said that Trump is a cinch for change.
Right.
And you may not like the change, so get ready. We're saying kind of the same thing. They have similarities from a standpoint they're going to change something.
They are going to change something, and we also agree the country needs changing. We have not been run well. People have a right to be angry, and I just hope that they go that way and we get an agent of change in November.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I can't believe there's still 6 months of this before we get to November.
It's been an exciting year.
It has been. All right, I want to talk to you about your book.
All right.
Because it's a great book.
Thanks.
Conspiracy
of the Ruling Class. Last September, I was, as you know, we cover both economics and politics, and I was watching this phenomenon of anger, and I decided I'd start researching it and figure out why it's happening. In part because I think a lot of people in the establishment don't understand it, need to know why it's going on that way. And that's produced the book. It came out. It debuted as number 8 on the bestseller list, which
that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I'm very happy with that result.
Conspiracy. Moving on up.
I'm moving on up. You know, what I discovered is that folks out there have every right to be angry. The guys who are in power now have basically turned the Constitution on its head, have taken power that the founding fathers never gave them, and they're taking plenty of resources in the form of taxes, and they're doing a lousy job with the stuff they've taken. Inequality's gotten worse. Roads are 2/3 more expensive than our driveways. Our education is top of the charts in cost, bottom of the charts in terms of output. And so I do think people are right to be angry. We need better results and time to have them.
This administration has moved you faster to the problem. I mean, to me, it has. Now, I'm a geologist, not an economist.
But it comes down to a little bit of common sense. Inequality's gotten worse under Barack Obama than it did under George Bush. It got worse under Bill Clinton than it did under Ronald Reagan. And you say, why can that be? Because they talk about it so much. Well, the fact is you can't solve an inequality problem when you don't have people working. 2/3 of all the families in America that have been added under Barack Obama have zero workers in them, 2/3 of them. How are you going to solve inequality when 2/3 of the families have zero workers? Obama will go down as the first president in which the number of two-earner families actually went down. First president in history to do that. In that kind of situation, you're digging the hole deeper.
Do you think they know what's happened to them?
Well, you know, one of the characteristics of the ruling class is they think they know best. You know, we define them with three things to tell someone's in the ruling class.
No, I'm saying, do you think those that lost know they went down during those periods?
Oh, I don't think so. No, I you know, one of the reasons I'm putting out the book is a lot of facts don't percolate into the public domain. And part of it is the ruling class thinks they know best. You know, that's one of their characteristics. They think most of us do not know how to run our lives well. They think the government has to run our lives, and they think they should be the ones to run the government.
Oh, yeah. I understand, and I agree with you wholeheartedly.
So if you combine their arrogance with their incompetence, you get a real good cause of anger. That's a lousy mix, and that's what we have right now.
We're going to see what happens here coming up. it'll be an interesting outcome. Do you think that this is one I want you to respond to, and it's one I cannot believe Hillary Clinton could be president of the United States. And I fully understand there are many, many people there say, I don't care what she's done, she will be the first woman president of the United States, and that's why I will vote for her. And I had a lawyer that works for me said that. And I said, please, don't say that. And said, no, I'll vote for her because it'll be the first woman president. Now, could she be?
Oh, she could win. I mean, I think it was Stalin who said, trouble with free elections is you never know who's going to win. And I think we have to face that fact. We don't know which way the country's going to go. I do think, you know, you have someone who is, you know, the epitome of the establishment, the epitome of the ruling class, someone who thinks she knows better how to run your life than you do. Public could vote for her. But, you know, that will be a situation where we're going to dig our hole much, much deeper, and it'll be a much tougher hole to get out of 4 years from now.
Ooh, God, I can't. See, I'm getting too old for this. I don't want to go out with Hillary president. So, Larry, thanks for a great interview.
Thanks for having me, Boone.
Sure.
Really appreciate it.